she drives me crazy, and she's sitting right over there. It's Bob McCown, Damian Cox on Primetime Sports. We are coast to coast on the Fan Radio Network, and in high definition on Sportsnet. It's Canada's most listened to sports talk presentation.
Yep.
Later in the program, Dirk Hayhurst of Sportsnet will join us from Dunedin, where the Blue Jays wrapped up spring training. It says here an unsuccessful spring training.
Who said that?
Well, the idiots who wrote our little scripty thing.
I don't think that's right. Do you think that?
No, I don't think that's right.
Who wrote that? Well, get him in here.
Maddie went home. He got out before I read it.
I don't think spring... I'm not sure spring training, unless all your guys get hurt.
Yeah, so last year the Blue Jays were like 24-5, and how good was that spring training?
Yeah.
He doesn't know anything.
Plus, half the team wasn't there.
Young whippersnapper.
Running around.
Declan Hill, the author of The Fix, will join us. He was supposed to be in studio in the last hour.
You kept talking.
And I kept talking, and Ken King kept talking, and Damian didn't do anything, and as usual. And we got carried away, and we didn't have time for Declan, but he's going to join us by phone a little bit later on. So, Declan and Dirk. The D-Boys a little
bit. Now we have
on.
A big chunk of time to talk to one of our favorite people. Big chunk of time.
And he's not available. However, Glenn Healy is. So here is Glenn Healy of Hockey Night in Canada.
Touche.
Hello, Heels.
Hello, boys. That was an interesting segment you just had.
What'd you think of that one?
What did you think of Ken King, huh?
Well, there's utter incompetency in this organization in so many different ways. I mean, this is the same organization that told Eric Francis, who's a writer in Calgary, that the outdoor game didn't make money. Really?
Yeah.
You know, I feel for Jay in a way, because, like, you know, he's taking all the bullets here. But there is plenty of blame to go around with everybody. First off, I don't believe that they took the best offer. And I think you can find a lot of hockey people to discount that. There's the first thing. You start off with Ryan O'Reilly. Okay, the offer sheet to Ryan O'Reilly. I have never seen that at any time, any place in hockey where that colossal a mistake was made. And I don't think it's just Jay. I would imagine, you know, most of their money stuff is done with Mike Holvich out in Calgary, and I bet you he had a play on this as well. The league made a mistake, but Jay took the bullet for that. And now you've got every Group 2 comparable is compared to Ryan O'Reilly if they have the same numbers. So you've really affected every team in the league by making that mistake. You definitely have to get a waiver signed. I mean, Jay should know that. He had to get that signed with Brad Richards when he traded Brad Richards to Dallas.
Hang on, Heels. What are you saying? You have to get a waiver signed. You mean...
Well, you're asking the player to take away his no movers, no trade clause. So you want the player's signature on a piece of paper saying, yes, I have officially waived my no move. So like Mike Komisarek, for instance, they didn't just send him to the minors. He had to sign a piece of paper.
Okay.
Well, and you'll recall, Heels, I asked King specifically, would you ever do it again without some signature addendum to the contract acknowledging that he's agreed to these terms? And he said, no, he would never do it again.
So do you believe, Glenn, that in the end, Jerome McGinley screwed the Flames?
He either talked to Sidney Crosby, emailed Sidney Crosby, or his representative group talked to the Pittsburgh Penguins because that's the place that this player wanted to play, but this player clearly picked Pittsburgh, and I would pick Pittsburgh if I was this player. Two, that being said, from an organizational standpoint, you take the best deal, you take the best package, and if you have consummated a deal with the Boston Bruins at 12 o'clock, you certainly do not wait 12 hours to inform the team that we made a mistake. You let them know right away. I mean, that's the way to do business.
But wait, I don't know that the Calgary Flames made a mistake. What happened, I believe still, and King did not shed any light on this that I could see, was that they believed they had the deal with Boston. They believed that Aginla had given them the right to do the deal with Boston. And when they went back to Aginla said, okay, I don't want to go to Boston.
That's where you have the paper signed.
Well, yeah.
And here's the three teams that I'm willing to go to. Call me when you're done. Jay has a reputation of being very considerate to players, and it is a flaw, but it is a good flaw if you're a player. And in this case, it's a good flaw if you're Jerome McGinley, because now he gets a chance to play with the best player on the planet. That being said, from an organizational standpoint, I want to make the best deal for the player I can. And really, I don't think the player, if he's given me a list of three teams, should have any input as to where he goes. He's given me the input, these three teams, and I make the best deal for the group.
I keep trying to want to feel as though we've got an answer here, but as to exactly what happened. My confusion is, though, is that when did they go to Jerome Iginla and tell him they had a deal with Boston?
I asked that question to Ken King, and he didn't answer it.
My guess would be in the afternoon. So you consummate the deal at 12.
But why would they?
Again, here's the other question.
Yeah.
At what point did Jerome Iginla inform them he didn't want to go to Boston?
Well, those are really good questions that number 12 can answer.
And did he say to them? Did they say to him, "We have three offers. These three, pick one." Is that what they did?
I can't imagine that the player would even know who any of these players are.
Wait a second.
Hold it.
It's
a matter of him saying, "These are my three teams. That's where I'm willing to go." And it's Jay Feaster's responsibility to say, "Butt out. I'll make the deal. And I'll call you when I've got the deal done. And you will go there because you've signed a piece of paper."
Correct.
"File with the league."
Right. But presumably, Heels, from what we've heard from Peter Chiarelli, they then said, "Okay, we've done a deal with Boston." They then went to him and said, "Okay, you're going to Boston."
And then he said no.
Or got on the phone with his representative groups, and they said, "I don't know about that spot. You know, there's a better one in Pittsburgh, and they've got some cap space, and this is the only year that the cap is north of $70 million, and, you know, that'd be a good place to play," and then, the wheels are in motion. Yeah. But it's incompetency from Calgary's standpoint.
Well,
and
one...
starts at the top, and Jay's getting the bullets, but there's lots of blame to go around.
Well... I said it all in the 4 o'clock hour today, my opinion of it. You didn't disagree when you came in here today at 5, and Heels is basically saying the same thing.
Yeah.
The only difference is I'm much harder on Jerome Iginla and less so on the Calgary Flames. But I think this is what Glenn's saying.
I think this was the amount of process, and that if Jay is as friendly to players as his, that if that's the way he is, that maybe that's what they did. They went and said to Jerome, "You know what? Here's a couple of teams." And he said, "I like that one better. But we already did a deal with Boston." "Yeah, but I'd rather." "Okay, Jerome, if that's what you want, that's what we'll do." And that's what
They thought they had a deal with Boston, and Chiarelli thought they had a deal with Boston. And that's why Jerome didn't play last night. And that's why the two kids in Providence didn't play last night.
Right.
Because everybody believed there was a deal.
So when wasn't there a deal?
At some point, Jerome said, no, this was not about we had a deal with Pittsburgh and we had a deal with Boston and we let Jerome pick, which is sort of the way Ken was trying to portray.
Yeah, that doesn't sound like it at all.
That did not happen.
No.
Heels, am I wrong?
Now he couldn't even tell you the names in the trade. And there's only two of them. You know, hey, at best, last night there was rumors going around that it was a conditional first-round pick. When the Flames saw that on the Twitter wire, at that point they should have stepped forward and said, no, that is not, that's false reporting, you know, but they didn't. Again, Jay's been down this road before. Brad Richards, he traded him from Tampa. He knows he had to get the player to sign that waiver so that he could make the deal. The player signed it, he filed it with the league, now I've got all my T's crossed. Ryan O'Reilly, the Flames should have known that player played in Europe. They should have known that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they didn't, and there's lots that didn't. Colorado didn't know he had played there either, because they wouldn't have matched the offer. Right now, they've just set a whole new bar for all their players. But again, this is detail in running an organization, and now their highest paid player in Calgary is a guy who hasn't played a playoff game.
And one of the weird things about this deal they did finally consummate with Iginla is one of the two players that they got in the deal is going to be an unrestricted free agent this summer. They might not even get him.
And the other one's got foot speed issues.
Oh, so do you and I. So.
Well, exactly. But it's...
Do you think now we're going to see Kiprusoff and Bouwmeester go bang, bang, rapid succession?
No, Kiprusoff's not going.
You don't think?
He's told the team, "I've got a new baby at home."
I'm told that's not exactly the case.
But
we're going to find out.
We'll find out, yeah. So there's conflicting issues.
Yes.
I can tell you when the baby's born, days before or months before, you have a much different feeling about leaving and going playing until you get that kid in your arms and you go, okay, why am I going? And, you know, look at next year's deal. He's at $1.5 million. He's made $35 million. Do you think he really needs the $1.5 million?
Nope.
So if he wants to stamp his foot down and say, "I'm staying with my wife and my baby,"
mm-hmm.
and he's going to do that. And I know there's lots of interest in Bouwmeester, so there's the next chip to fall. And I hope he gets, if that player has a no waiver, no move, get that waiver signed.
Well, yeah. And I mean, I went through this in the first hour and took some heat for it. And under that, why didn't you get it in writing? And I mean, you know, you worked at the PA, so there is a history of this kind of situation. Player has a no trade. You go to them and ask for the teams. They put it in writing. The player signs it. You register it with the league. Then you're free to deal him to any one of those four teams, and he no longer has veto power, correct?
Totally correct. And we saw it in Toronto with Mike Komisarek. For him to be sent to the minors with a no-move clause, that player had to sign a form filed with the league that allowed the Maple Leafs to send him to the Marlies.
Yeah. And that's the fundamental mistake on the part of Feaster. On the other hand, my point has long been, I like to think of myself as a person of some integrity. I don't think I've ever done a verbal deal. I've done many verbal deals, dozens of verbal deals in business, in this business over the years. I never had anybody come back to me and say you broke your word. So, and I think it's important. I think it's important for anybody I deal with, and I think it's important for me. I think Jerome Iginla broke his word to this organization. That's my criticism of Jerome Iginla. I don't think he handled this situation the way he should have.
Well, I think on the way out is exactly the way Jerome has played this while he was part of the organization. And
explain.
Word on the street was that Jerome was a player who played his own way. Coaches had issues with the way he played, but didn't matter because Jerome was a guy who had a lot of power with ownership and a lot of power with management. Mm-hmm. And here's another example of a player just exhibiting that fact that he's got some power. When he decided that it was time to move, his number one focus was to give them the three teams and to leave this organization better than when he got here. And if they can't make the best deal possible, then he's not putting the organization first. Nor should he. He's a player. He thinks he's got, again, about power. But, you know, when it's all said and done, the organization probably didn't make the very best deal they could for their star player because Jerome Iginla said, I ain't going there.
But, Heels, if you tell me you're going to be somewhere, if I ask you to show up at something for whatever reason, whether there's a monetary reward for you or not, and I say, Heels, can you do this? And you say, yes, I can. Don't I have the right to expect you to be there?
Well, I did tell the Leafs I thought we could win a cup. So I guess I let them down on that word. No, but you didn't say you would win a cup.
Bob, but don't you think if they don't do what Heels is saying they should do, which is get Iginla to sign the waiver.
That takes Iginla off the hook?
Then he's off the hook.
I don't agree. I think you have a moral obligation here, especially to an organization. I mean, we're talking about the greatest player in the history of the Flames. Ken King doesn't want to throw him under the bus. Everybody wants to celebrate his career there. And, okay, that's fine. I'm good with that. I get that he's the best player that's ever played there. But you can't be both things. You can't be, you know, a little bit pregnant here.
Yeah, but if I say to you,
if you're a great guy and the representative of the franchise, then at the end of your
But Rob, you can't say, I said
I'd do this, but I'm not going to now.
No, but you, if they gave him the latitude to choose, he chose.
Spooner?
I don't believe that even for a nanosecond. You mean they told Boston, you have a deal, but in the meanwhile, they had a thing with Pittsburgh over here, and then went to Jerome and said, okay, I got a deal with Boston, and I got a deal with Pittsburgh. Which one do you want?
Well, I think at some point, or somebody told him, as Glenn said, maybe Crosby called him and said, you know, this is what I'm hearing. This is what Cheryl's telling me we can get. You should tell them you want to go there.
I'm not disputing that happened. What I'm saying is I don't believe the Calgary Flames did two simultaneous deals and presented the option to Jerome Iginla. Choose the one you want. Do you believe that happened, Glenn?
Not a chance in the world.
Thank you.
Let a player. When was the last time he was down in the minors to watch a kid play?
Hang on. Yeah. Then you guys are saying this is what you guys are saying happened. Then mm-hmm. They made a deal with Boston. They told Jerome, "You're going to Boston. We're taking out of the game." And they and Jerome said, "No, got anything else?"
Yeah.
You think that's what happened?
That is exactly what I think happened.
Your choice is to play with Spooner or Crosby. And as a player,
I think the Bruins have a few other players.
No, but they didn't present that choice.
No, but
it sounds like they did.
That is one of those teams that he put down on the list. Okay? And it was.
Yep.
Then certainly
you think he's under an obligation to go there.
Well, absolutely. He is. But I
can
see if you don't do the detail here, okay, if you don't tie this thing up the right way with the league,
right,
then you've handed the player back the power again.
You've given him latitude.
You've given him latitude, and yes, if I was a winger, I'd love to play with Crosby. Has anyone watched him this month? But that power should not have been placed in the player's hands. If he decided he's going to move, and you've decided you're going to move and make the organization better and start the rebuild, here's the three teams. I'll make the best hockey deal. You get on the first flight.
You go where we tell you to go.
Totally.
Within the confines of, or the parameters of the teams that you've told us you'll accept a deal to. And by the way, Heels, King did acknowledge that it was four.
Okay, so
because I know both numbers have been out there, three or four.
He said there's four, but they had three. What he thought he said were three
of the
quote
four
unquote viable offers.
Right,
Chicago and L.A. So we'll add those two teams to the mix.
Yeah, we think those.
And
are
we know
two.
We know half of the offers, and half of them clearly one is better than the other in my mind.
Yeah,
as a hockey analyst.
Now we are obviously spending a lot of time looking at this, the Calgary thing, and we're going to continue to do that because this story isn't over yet, I don't think, from a Calgary point of view. Just quickly switching over to Pittsburgh, who have picked up in rapid succession Brendan Morrow, Douglas Murray, and Jerome Iginla. Are they now the pejorative favorite to win the Stanley Cup?
In my mind, they are. I mean, not only did they pick up good players, they picked up character. They picked up leaders. They picked up guys that have been through this war before. Guys that aren't going to be fazed by going down 2-0 in a series, or aren't going to be fazed by, you know, having to play teams that are physical, because they're physical. They're not fazed at all with any type of game that you throw at that team. Want to play a speed game against Pittsburgh? Gotcha. You want to play a physical game now? No problem. But they have a lot of the components, and they're smart. This is the year the Caps north of 60 or 70. And so they had cap room, and they won't be able to have it next year because it's going to go down to 64-3 next year. So while you can, and the players are playing the way they're playing, then make a push. And if I'm the Rangers, if I'm Boston, these teams now, like, they have been dealt a significant setback just by Pittsburgh loading up the way they've loaded up.
Why are you saying the Rangers?
Well, the Rangers are a team that finished second in the National Hockey League last year.
Yeah, but
you know, they were an inch close to going to the Stanley Cup Finals. Like, maybe they haven't had a good 48-game season.
They may not even make playoffs.
Okay, but when they do get in there,
okay,
they've
that's
got
a guarantee.
Elite goalie, elite defense, elite scorers. The Nash deal was a big one for them. But even with all that dazzle and all that bling, they are still way behind Pittsburgh now because of the moves Pittsburgh's made.
Mm.
But they're a team that, you know, there's expectation there. You know, their coach was almost coach of the year. Their goalie was the Vezina Trophy winner. I mean, they could have had a defenseman win or be at least mentioned with the Norris. It was that good. So they got a lot of pieces there, but not like the pieces in the chessboard they're looking across from now, where Pittsburgh's sitting with three queens on the board.
Oh no, it looks like a stacked deck. And look, I think
just hang on. There is also, let's look at the other possibility here. Brendan Morrow looks awfully like he's close to being finished.
And so does Jerome Iginla.
And so does Jerome Iginla.
And I agree with you. But here's what I was about to say.
And Douglas Murray has not had a great year. So, you know, the names seem big. But then when you actually start to look at these guys, you start to wonder, okay, but they've still got to perform.
But here's my, if I had to guess, just a guess, and we've seen it before. In long term, those two guys, I'm not convinced, aren't at the end. But for a short run,
short-term,
motivated by this move, mm-hmm, and the optimism that exists in Pittsburgh, what do they want, 13
in a row? And
the opportunity to play with great players and win a Stanley Cup, maybe their games,
can
for a brief period of time.
He can score five important goals for you in the playoffs.
That wouldn't surprise me.
Right.
But would I sign Jerome Iginla for a five-year contract, which is what he wants? Not on your life.
Mm. And I think they know that they can't sign him for that because they know the cap's going down next year. So this is strictly a rental through and through. And, you know, look at the teams that are in the playoffs. Are you afraid of Ottawa? Are you afraid of New Jersey? Are you afraid of Winnipeg? Like, these are the
teams. Well, based on what happened to Pittsburgh last year, they should be afraid of just about everybody, including their own shadow.
but you know, break down the teams. An Ottawa team minus their goalie, close to coming back.
Well, then you can throw in
forward.
You can throw in Montreal and Toronto, and
totally,
those, you know, and that. Are you afraid of those guys?
No, you're not afraid of anybody. No, you're the Pittsburgh
this
Penguins.
Cruise through the East. like we did when I was with the New York Rangers, where I think we beat the Islanders in three.
The best of seven.
We beat them in 3.5. You know, by the time we had got to the Stanley Cup Finals against Vancouver, we had traveled a whole host of about 500 miles because we went to the island, Washington, and then 8 miles across the bridge to New Jersey. So, yeah, this is the year. You can spend.
We got to go.
I know. I just want to
have one more.
I know, but Healy's an interesting guy.
Not that.
You got to give a short answer to this. What does Boston do now? Martin Saint-Louis?
I'd make the biggest push in the world for that to happen.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I agree with you. I think they got to do something. They have to do something, not just for their team, but also for their fan base, who are sitting there going, what the bleep?
Totally.
Thanks.
It was a good start.
Thanks, Heels.
Great stuff, guys.
Glenn Healy of Hockey Night in Canada. We'll turn to baseball. Ricky Romero spoke teary-eyed about his demotion to Dunedin, even if it's temporary. Dirk Hayhurst is in Dunedin, and we'll talk to him next when Primetime continues on the Fan Radio Network and Sportsnet. Ken King was on time. Glenn Healy was on time. Dirk Hayhurst wants time.
Did you hear, Mr. McCown? Now, we will be down at the ballpark on Tuesday for opening day.
I have not been so informed.
Oh, well, we will be. I'm just informing you.
I have not been so informed.
I've just told you. You are now informed.
You are not the boss of me.
You know who's throwing out the first pitch?
To quote every five-year-old.
You know who's throwing out the first pitch?
I do.
Our man.
Geddy Lee. Guess who's going to be a guest on Primetime Sports on opening day?
Geddy Lee. Oh, cool. Plus, he loves tennis. I'm gonna on the air ask him if he'll play tennis with
you. You know what I'm gonna try and figure out how to do?
He's a cool guy.
Because you know that the production company with which I have association.
With which?
Filmed their most recent concert series. Tour. For for HBO or whoever. And I've got the Rushes from Rush.
Oh.
I love to say that. You should see this.
Oh, I believe it.
It's awesome. I wonder if I can show some of it. I'll have to call Geddy Lee.
Well, their last documentary, the one Beyond the Lighted Stage, was tremendous.
Oh, no.
You say yours is better, of course.
Well, I've only seen 3 minutes of it. But it was pretty awesome because it was a 17 or 19 camera shoot.
Hmm.
And some of the camera angles are just, they're fantastic. And I mean, you got to like the band and you know, their stage setup and all that has to work. And, you know, we don't have anything to do with that.
I saw them last spring or whenever they were in Toronto, Maple Leaf Gardens, Air Canada Center. The first time I'd ever seen them, they were tremendous still.
I want to talk about Ricky Romero and we can't get Dirk Hayhurst.
What's his problem?
Where's Dirk? You don't know? When did you talk to him last? Oh, there's Dirk.
Oh, okay. Well, tell him he's in trouble.
Well,
maybe we don't want him anymore.
All we had to do was delay for a second.
Can we see if we can get somebody else? And then
we could have had Doug Smith, but
Doug's good too.
I love Doug. We're gonna have Doug on tomorrow.
Well, we gotta have Hayhurst now.
Well, because the Romero thing kind of Ricky spoke,
but
today.
He didn't show up on time. He stood you up. He's disrespecting you.
Don't talk. Now the producer's having a chat with him. How are you? Where'd you go for dinner last night? Blah 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 blah. Is he there? For God's sake, put him on the air. Feel like crazy.
Phil.
What happened to him? Is he there? Hey, Hurst, are you there?
I'm here, buddy.
Where you been? We've been waiting for you here. Been filling for like 5 minutes here waiting for you.
I'm so sorry, man. I'm in the longest line ever at the airport. And
Oh, you're coming home now? Really?
Yeah.
No.
Flying back now.
Ever since you became a big TV radio star,
oh, no.
You've changed.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you've changed.
Eyewitnesses, his hat size went from 7 to 7.75.
Oh, you should have seen him strut.
Like instantly.
See him strutting around Dunedin?
Oh, yeah.
It was like, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Mick Jagger.
I'm Dirk Hayhurst.
You're not.
And you aren't.
It's a palpable sense of superiority. I can't help but just come to the pull of it.
It's hard to be humble when you're as great as you are. You know that.
So you have the over after what? What's it been? 5 months of spring training? This went on forever.
Oh, 65 days.
Wow. You know?
There's no big deal. I mean,
man. Damian was there for a week.
Go to minor league extended spring training sometime.
Oh, yeah, man.
That's the worst.
Oh, is it?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, by far, yeah.
Is that what Ricky Romero's really unhappy about?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's if I'm him, I'm pretty bitter. That's like going to the salt mines to work for the next 6 months. So hopefully he gets out of there soon, but it is not a good time.
Look, the three of us talked when we were in Florida and with Brunt, and we talked about what do you do, and I think we all had the same opinion. We don't know what they're going to do, but we know what they should do. And when push came to shove, I think we all agree they made the right decision. The question becomes, and Cox and Ike sort of argued with this about this a bit, at what point had they made that decision? Not when they announced it to us, but at what point do you think they decided, look, Hap is better than Ricky now. Hap's going to be number five.
Look, I don't know about you, but I feel a little lied to. I mean, we were very upfront saying, are you sure you want this guy in the five spot of the rotation at the beginning of the year? Are you sure? Have you seen his spring training? It hasn't been good. He doesn't look like he's any better. You keep telling us he still looks broken. There's mechanical problems. You keep telling us he doesn't have it quite together mentally, but you're going to throw him out there? Are you for sure? And the answer was always a resounding, there is no other person for the job. It is his job. End of discussion. Yep. And then they just throw it on you like, oh, yeah, we've been thinking about this for a while. Pardon me as I call a polite BS on that. I think that happened right after Ricky Romero had his last outing against the Pirates in which he struggled. And I think that they sat down and they said, you know what? Who are we fooling? Nobody, not even ourselves. We can't even fool ourselves anymore. He is not ready. It doesn't matter what he says. I mean, I love the bravado from Ricky Romero saying that he's going to figure it out and come back. But this is bravado he has used before to tell himself he's a warrior. And I just think he had ran out of chances. And I think they want to make it sound like they were thinking this, they were going that way. I don't buy it. I think that last outing just kind of told everybody that your doubts are confirmed. You need to quit lying to yourself. He is not ready, and it's the best possible decision. It's not a tragic mercy killing. I mean, it was the best move. He's not ready, and it's just going to make whatever is wrong with him worse.
That's right.
Send him out there to get punished.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So
now,
that's my call.
Here's my question. There seems to be this general belief among people that, okay, this is a rough patch, no question about it. Eventually, he's going to figure it out and he's going to get back. Maybe he's not going to figure it out. I mean, in your experience of pitchers of this level who have run into this kind of problem, have you seen them bounce back?
Well, look, everybody wants to say Roy Halladay. Nobody wants to say Dontrelle Willis. Why not?
Right.
I mean, you know, it doesn't always work the way it should. Guys don't always bounce back. I mean, the grim reality of it is there's just as good a precedent set for this to happen and your career to end, to go down there and never recover from it. And nobody wants to talk that way. And I don't mean to sound like I'm down on Ricky. You know, I love the guy's personality. I think everybody is pulling for him. But this is one of those situations where the results dictate everything. He's down there now. It doesn't matter what kind of warrior spirit he has. It only matters if he's going to recover. And frankly, I have my doubts about that, and I really hate to be the pessimist here, but, you know, when you run into a situation like this, it's almost like entering into this alternate reality where whatever you say, whatever you believe in, it doesn't matter. All that matters is your results. So he can say that I don't want the media in my rear end about this. I don't want all the hard questions to make me think about everything that I've gone through. When I hear that, when I hear this hypersensitivity to my surrounding environment, to me, that says that this will always be a factor for Ricky. The outside environment, people questioning him, it's always going to be a struggle for him. He just is not and I hate to say it, he is not the arrogant SOB that can say, I don't care what anybody thinks. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to do my thing. Because if he was, he would have done it by now. I think his awareness to his environment and the fact that he wants to be humble, he wants to be the competitor everyone wants him to be, those things, which are great character traits, may actually end up hurting him through this process.
In a nutshell, here's my analysis. I'd like to quote Yogi Berra and say it's 50% physical and 90% mental, but it's 99% mental and 1% physical with Ricky. That's what I believe.
Can I just ask one question?
There's more.
Just part of that. When you say that, though, aren't you acknowledging this is a guy coming off arm problems with two bad knees?
No, I think that's the factor.
Did
he have arm problems at the beginning of last year? Did he have two bad knees at the beginning of last year? Did they take him out of the rotation in order to solve those problems? No. I'm not saying they're, you know, Dirk will tell you, baseball players, athletes, you know, I mean, they things hurt a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think any of this is career threatening or impactful in terms of performance. I acknowledge there's something there, but that's not why he's having problems. And let me cite, remember Ian Baker Finch?
Yep.
Ian Baker Finch was a pro golfer, won the 91 British Open. For a moment in time, Ian Baker Finch was a serious player on the PGA Tour. And then he contracted a case of the demons, the dreaded yips. And all of a sudden, Ian Baker Finch couldn't make a putt and couldn't even bring himself to take the putter back away from the ball.
So what are you saying? This is Steve Blast syndrome with Ricky Romero?
Demons. He doesn't know how to throw the ball over the plate. Dirk, respond.
Dirk, answer. Yes, well, I think that there absolutely is some precedent here to think about, if you've coined it or not, the demon factor.
Mm-hmm.
And I absolutely agree with you that I think that, you know, Ricky is always going to have these demons now. And that is one of the reasons why I think the Blue Jays mishandled him. I think that if there was a physical problem, if you do think his mechanics are bad, and that's what's contributing to whatever errors he's having now, his mechanics have not changed. They've been the same grade of mechanics last year to this year and the year before that. Why didn't you shut him down to get those mechanics fixed at some other time? You could have even used them as an excuse way back before this got so far out of control that no one can look at Ricky Romero without looking at him through the lens of demon infestation.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, the answer to that is because that's the cover story, is he has mechanical problems.
You don't think that's true?
Thank you.
I don't think it's true even. Are they working with him on stuff? You work with a pitcher every day on little things. This is not the cause. This is a little thing, is mechanical thing, whatever it is, stepping the right way, throwing his arm across. He's been pitching that way for years and successfully sometimes and not successfully. Hasn't got anything to do with it. That's not why he's in Dunedin. He's in Dunedin because between his ears, he doesn't know how to get the ball over the plate.
Bob, you said that what was the point? Remember, what was the point at which they decided to send him down?
Yeah.
I think it was shortly after he made a public announcement saying, I wanted to go play third base and shortstop during batting practice just to feel like I was a ball player again. I think when you make that kind of statement public, that is like an affirmation that I am having serious identity problems on this baseball field, and that is giving it just gives credence to every mental doubt that you have about this guy right now. Look, I'm not saying he's a flawed individual. I still think he's a great competitor.
Me too.
But that's like saying I have something wrong mentally. I don't want to say that I have something wrong mentally. So you have to check the context clues, and here's a big one.
Yeah. See, and I think the turning point was that game over at the Matic Complex against Pittsburgh, where he threw 64 pitches. He was supposed to go 5 or 6 innings, went 2 1/3, walked a bunch. And he was pitching against, what, Pittsburgh A guys, which isn't relative necessarily. 86 on the gun, couldn't find the strike zone. Guys were hitting them. It was a disaster. Maybe before that, there were lots of signs before that. But at that point, for me at least, it was, it's over. You can't bring him north.
We got to go, Dirk. Do you think Ricky Romero will pitch for the Blue Jays this season?
I think he will, if only to salvage all the money they've spent. They've got to get him back up there and try him. But I'm not sure it's going to be a beautiful outing when it happens. I expect some ugliness.
When do you think do you think they'll move him up even if he's not ready?
I think you'll see 1, 2, maybe 3 good outings in a row. And if Hap is even pitching borderline, he'll get replaced with Ricky Romero because they still feel they have an obligation to him.
I get that.
And they are hungry to give him the benefit of the doubt if he figures it out.
Yeah, either that or an injury, right?
Hey, we could have talked to you for longer, but you showed up late, so.
Go catch your airplane.
I'm big league, man. I'm bigger than the game. What can I say, yo?
Yeah, no, and no liquids on the plane. You terrorist, you.
See you, Dirk.
Dirk Hayhurst of Sportsnet.
He's bigger than the game. That would be a great segment. We have Hayhurst every week.
Bigger than the game.
Here he is, bigger than the game, Dirk Hayhurst.
Do you remember who we're supposed to talk to next?
Yeah, oh, are Declan. We talking to Declan? We got to get Declan
on.
I was trying to get out of
Hang
that
on.
Segment.
Prime Time, I'll be back in a minute. You're watching on SportsCenter, listening on the Fan Radio Network. Before the hour, here's one of our best friends and our most patient friends, Declan Hill.
Don't suck up to him. He's going to be mad at you.
Oh, he's already mad at me because.
Sorry, Declan.
Hey, how are you?
We're good. We're, you know, and we really apologize, but it's just one of those hairy days.
It's a big day for hockey in this town, so no apologies needed.
The FBI has revealed that the son of a former FIFA vice president, Jack Warner, has been persuaded to be a key witness.
Yes.
For this international probe into corruption in soccer. How big is this news?
Well, it's pretty big. I mean, this is like for the people coming into this who may be listening to us for the first time, the corruption inside FIFA is a perpetual ongoing soap opera. And one of the arch villains of this is the guy that used to run North American soccer, a guy named Jack Warner. And I'm pretty confident about using those words because not only was he sued by umpteen millions of people, but he's also thrown out of FIFA last year for these corruption charges. They've never gone criminal yet. They've always been a kind of a sports official, sports administration. The guys had to resign, all those kind of things. But there's been an ongoing covert FBI investigation against this guy, and they've just revealed that his son, as you said, is willing to turn witness for them.
Is he gonna throw his father under the bus?
Sounds like it. I mean, this is, and the really depressing thing is that if you play soccer in Canada, a little bit of your money flows upstream to these guys. I mean, this is the problem. You know, it's not just sponsorship money. It's a little bit of everybody's money from the Canadian Soccer Association flows upstream to these guys. And so, it's long overdue that these guys are brakes are being put on these guys.
Give us an update. What's the status of the guy they were looking for in Singapore trying to get extradited?
He's still there.
Yeah.
He's still there. As you know, I was over in Rome. I was invited over there by Interpol and FIFA. To make a keynote speech about what the soccer world should do against match fixing. And I summarized, I said, guys, if you really want to win this war, arrest Dan Tan.
Right.
Dan Tan is a guy that's traveled around the world fixing hundreds of soccer games. Again, I don't say this, as you guys know, lightly. I'm not anxious to get sued by anyone, but the mountain of evidence, there are hundreds of pages about this guy's activity. His phones have been tapped. They're showing him embroiled with at least 8 Italian professional soccer teams. And so he's over in Singapore. There's been an international arrest warrant issued in his name, and he's still there. You know, no arrests have been made. Nothing's there. He's just carrying on his business as normal.
Real quickly, you had dinner. I remember the story you told us about the dinner you had in Moscow, I believe, with a top organized crime figure there.
Yes.
Where is he in this, as best you know?
He doesn't touch the Asian match fixes. He is something else. He's a guy named Anzor Kikilashvili. Again, happy to drop his name because U.S. Congress identified him as the number one man in Russian organized crime, a guy providing Krisha or protection for the rest of the Russian mob. And this guy was the guy who was in business, not accidentally, not coincidentally, but a senior business partnership going on between him and the National Hockey League player Pavel Bure.
Yeah.
There was never any question about these guys' business connections or their friendships.
Could you get to Tan?
Sorry, Bob, say that again?
Can you get to Dan Tan?
Can I get to Dan Tan?
Have you talked to him? You did in the past, didn't you?
I haven't talked to him in the last couple of months, but I have very, very good contacts.
Mm.
Very, very good contacts.
I'm wondering what he's doing and thinking is. Do you think I got like 30 seconds here, but would you suspect he's sitting somewhere and laughing about all this?
Yeah, I've loved your questions. Quick. Because we're basically talking about protection. I believe Dan Tan has very high-level protection. It's a complicated story, but the guy's fixed so many international soccer matches that I think he knows the soccer officials who have helped him, and he knows some high-level people who have bankrolled him. And if they were to put him on trial, he would talk about those guys. And so I think it's just a national embarrassment for Singapore.
We got to get out of here. I got to get out of here. Declan, always a pleasure, pal. I'll see you tomorrow, by the way. Our thanks to Declan, to Dirk Hayhurst, to Glenn Healy for joining us, for Damien, Bob. Good night.